JC.
Now, good afternoon. How's Gary doing? And Gerald TR.
Hey, today it sure is good. Feels good outside today. Tom, how's the dab gain turned up too high on this mic?
No, sir. Full quieting sounds nice. Deviations, great.
Thank you. You been busy today, or you been? I know you haven't been lounging around. You never do.
Today, and so is Bernice. Let me switch hands here. I was messing with the computer. Looking in an electric BMW here. Hi. Just what I need. Jerry, we went out yesterday, and there was a big pile of mulch left where that maple tree was out in front. And I mean big. It was quite a few wheelbarrows full. And then there was a few roots we still had to carve out of there. In fact, one I had to get the electric chainsaw out, which I can hardly lift anymore, and cut off a couple. But he done a good job. And we put that mulch out along, you know, grass has a hard time growing along the edge of the blacktop because I put some seed out on it yesterday. And I stomped it down a little bit with the riding lawnmower there before she did that. And then I went out back after I got that done and blew off all the leaves out there in the field. The ones I couldn't mulch with the lawnmower and by the range out back there. And did all that. And to be honest with you, I didn't know if I was going to make it out of bed this morning. I hurt so bad, but that's standard operating procedure, except not to that extreme. Hi.
Pretty rough there. That sounds like they did a good job for you on your tree, though, to get that mulch out of there. We leave ours sitting out here for a while, kind of let it, you know, because those stumps, they eventually kind of rot out a little bit, so we kind of hauled the mulch out, put some hard pack soil down, and then we try to put a little topsoil or something on top of it, but it takes a long time to grow anything over it. Because it just keeps sinking over a period of time. We fill them in, another year or so, they'll sink a little bit more. But only for the bigger trees. The sweet gum seems to take longer than anything to disintegrate over the years. We got one here in the backyard, but done not long after we bought the house back in '95, and it's still got a little bit of a dip in it. We put some field dirt in, back to that, and put some sod over this. Bermuda side. It looks like it's pretty level right now, but I don't know whether it'll, get any, dip down and get, fall in, to the hole anymore or not. I hope we got most of it out. We dug it out a little bit first, and then we added some field dirt in. Hopefully it'll stay the same for the next year or so. Anyway, I hope.
TR. Yeah, Jerry, I think he took that down probably, about 6 inches, right? Below the surface on that stump. Probably 6 inches below the surface, 4 to 6. So he'd done a good job there. It was a big stump eater that he had. And they didn't up the front yard. There was a few little grooves there where I think they drug something there, but we covered that up with some field dirt and then put some seed on it. And the same way there on the stump. I don't think she put any field dirt in there yet, though, did you? She didn't have any. We was out. And I did not want to go anywhere on Black Friday or Saturday or Sunday, for that matter. So, I'm sure it will sink down some, more than likely, but it's pretty solid. We let it set for a few days before we done that, but whenever we overdo that, we pay for it in spades. I think the bumping on the riding lawnmower is what tears my back up, but it still looks nice out there today, out back, all the way out. And hope it don't blow any of them leaves back. It started raining about 3 o'clock this morning, I think. When I got up, it was raining. And we'd had about a half inch. Now we've had 1.1. But the wind's out of the southwest now, gusting, peaking at 15. And I guess it's supposed to be nice all day. And then northern front's coming through, and it'll get out of the northwest then, I'm sure, Jerry. But the temperature's really rising fast out there. It says 68 in the direct sunlight.
For DJC. Yeah, it's, we went out to grab us a little something to eat earlier, and it was 69 degrees. I went out this morning, and it was raining. It rained pretty hard there, and went out a downpour. It rained pretty good there for about 30 minutes, and it started, you know, it stopped, and now it's been gorgeous this afternoon. Hopefully it dries out a little bit. I'd like to get my yard cut one more time this year. I think it's getting all, got some weeds showing up out there. But you'll like cutting that grass after you got rid of that tree, though. It'll be a whole lot easier, and hopefully you don't have to deal with leaves. Leaves and acorns and all kinds of junk. I'd like to have some trees. I'd like to have some trees in the back part of the yard, but the yard's just not big enough. I wasn't big enough to have anything like that. Get them away from the house, and that way they can just be out there. You don't have to worry about cutting up under them and that sort of thing. But the leaves are just terrible. Thankfully, I got most of the trees down here on both sides of us now, so we don't have a leaf problem anymore.
Well, every time it blowed, Jerry, that maple tree out front rolls, it would blow small limbs all over the front yard, and I had to go out and pick them up. They were dead. That thing went up about 10 feet, and then there was three or four, maybe 8-inch limbs that curled up and went upward, and it was probably about 35, 40-foot tree. But there was just 1,000 little limbs coming off of those. And, man, in the fall, it was just a mess every year to clean those leaves up. They just, most of them would fall in our yard. I'd always go over and tell Tim I was going to blow them over in his yard. He said he didn't care. He'd just mow over them. But I mowed last week. With that fescue, but mostly now I just run over with the deck at about 4 inches and or 3.5 and mulch those leaves. And I think that's about over with, although we still got some oak trees out back, but I'm hoping Mother Nature and the good Lord takes care of those where I don't have to.
I believe most hours are gone. We got the oaks. They cut down all the oaks and sweet gums next door, so that's where we're getting most of our leaves. We don't have any trees in our yard at all. We cut the last one down about 2 or 3 years ago, I guess. There's sweet gum, and it just left those balls everywhere. And they cut down some huge trees over there next door. They cut down about 15 of them, and the leaves just measure like night and day. Now, and after getting the leaves up and getting the trees down, our yard is starting to look halfway decent. If it just rained during the summer, maybe once in a while, instead of going for a drought for 2 months, we hope to put some more sod out next year in some places. And I'd like to keep putting a little Bermuda out here and there in some of these places that need some sod, and get it watered, because that Bermuda just didn't take that much. It didn't take as much rain, water is the other stuff that I think they said it could do with about an inch, every week or so. And of course, when it gets dormant, you don't have to worry about it. It is a nice turf if you can afford to get it put out. We've been putting out about 8 or 10 rolls this past year. We're going to put out that many next year, maybe a little bit more if the weather cooperates with us.
Well, Jerry, on another another subject. I was looking here at Midway's ad, and they got this Bushnell. Oh, it's 3-9. I thought it was a 4-12. Yeah, that one don't have an AO on it. Good, because I thought they were selling the one I give $100 for 59, but it's 3-9. That adjustable objective on that thing's getting where it's really tough to turn, especially if you're hurrying up on a squirrel, you know. And I've tried getting some penetrating oil down to it, because I know there's got to be an O-ring there, but it's sealed real good because it's full of nitrogen, you know, and it just ticks me off. It's tight, but boy, scopes nowadays have just gotten out of reason.
About several loopholes back a couple, 3 or 4 years ago before they got so high. We got a couple of, you know, rimfire MOA, graduations. I think we paid like $199 for those, and they're $300 now. We got most of the old ones. I don't have anything new at all. But the new ones that I've seen were just out of sight. Vortex, I make a Diamondback, and it was a pretty reasonable scope. It's still about $100 or so, but it was real clear, I thought. And they guaranteed it for life, so if you had a problem, you just send it back. But all the loophole stuff, most all of it's still made in the United States, but it's just gotten, you can only find one for under $300 or $400 now.
Well, some of it they design and then they have it made, and I can't remember where they get it made at, Japan or something, but they assemble it, but it's under their specifications, and as far as I'm concerned, they're one of the finest that there ever was. I've had a lot of different ones. I was looking at the Vortexes the other day, and they got one. It's a 3-9, or maybe that's the Leopold one I was looking at. Yeah, it was Leopold. And it was a 3-9, and it had a 30-millimeter adjustable objective. I have to have the adjustable objective. There's no getting around it, because when you're shooting close, the parallax is, it just sucks. And it was about $299, I think, but I read some of the reviews on it, and it's more or less for a 22, but do your 22s, do they have adjustable objective on them?
A custom 22, I got an ultralight arms 22, and I ran a 4-12 AO loophole there for a long time, but what I got now, the only thing we got right now is loopholes, and they're 3-9s, I think, Tom, and they're all just parallax to set at 60 yards on them. It works pretty good down to, it doesn't really bother me that much until you get down to about 25 yards, and you can tell, you move your head around, you know, and see the reticle move around a little bit on there when you get down to 25, but it works pretty good out to having up between 50 and 60 yards. It doesn't bother me too much to get around 25 yards, but you can adjust them yourself. It's not all you got to do is unlock that ring a little bit, and we used to use a suction cup mechanism on them, just turn them by hand to adjust them. But the AOs are by far the best, they're best, and as far as I'm concerned. And like I said, that Vortex is either Diamondback, or there may be one rim right. There's one, maybe one up under that one. That's very reasonable, and it's a pretty good escape. But Lipo used to have, they used to have the biggest turning centers in the United States, and where they were up in Oregon, and they used to get all their glass from shot glass out of Pennsylvania. But I think they're probably sourcing it somewhere else now. But most of them are still made in the U.S. But some of them I'm sure aren't, but they'll have to say that if they're not.
Get source their glass at the same place. They're very particular about that. My 15 power Nurdle was from, the urinal was from Pennsylvania. In fact, when I got it, it was shipped to me in a wooden box. And, boy, that was a great scope. But I wouldn't want it back. Not to just a common 22. But I did see one the other day on a 22 rifle, and oh, it was magnificent. It was a 1¼-inch, 10 power, like Gunny Hathcock used. And the one I had was 2-inch, but boy, you could see clear up till dark with it. We used to go out and shoot at night with them, and it was great. You know, just put a light down on the target at 100 yards, and that way you avoided all that heat, the wavy lines, you know, heat distortion, up in the Kansas summertimes. Some old boy come down there to run us off one night, and he thought we were shooting geese, and we was down in the dumps, and we were shooting targets, and I had a dime down there, and there was a couple of chunks out of it, and he said, he was the security officer for Mackie Clemens Cone. I told him, if you got the guts to come out here and look, I'll show you what we're doing. And he jumped out of his car and walked right over there. It was pitch black because we didn't have any light up there by us. And I had a 12-volt battery and a gimbal light down there on the target. And he looked through that scope and he says, well, I'll be, we'll say, darned. He said, I've never seen anything like that in my life. And there was a couple of chunks out of that dime. I don't know if we're shooting it. Yeah, we're shooting a dime there. We shot a quarter at 200. But and then Rocky, he had those 40 XB Remingtons with us that night, and he'd never seen anything like them 27-inch stainless steel barrels either. So he told us just come down to the line shack and check in with him, and he wouldn't think it was guys out there poaching geese out there on the Mineland Reclamation Range.
Oh, your Nurdles are really nice scopes. I had a Lyman Super Target Spot. Mine was a 6-power, and I put it on it. I had an Anschutz Model 64 match rifle, and it was a 3-position rifle. It was one of these real lightweight versions of it. It didn't have the curve hook butt plate, all that sort of stuff. It was it still had the rail on it, you know, for the hand and all that sort of thing. But it was a left-handed one, and it had a kind of a vertical grip. A guy wrote an article on Gun Digest years ago about one, and that's where I got the idea. And I actually found a left-handed one that here in Anderson, this back when I was in school, and it had target blocks. I never bought the metallic sights for it, but it had the target blocks on it, so I put that Super Target Spot on it, 6-power, 900 with that thing for a number of years, I guess. It was heavy. It weighed about 8.5 or 9 pounds, but squirreled it. I absolutely don't have a chance. The only problem with it at the time was the reticle was real fine on it, but that was just a great rifle. And I'll have to find that article sometime. I still got it somewhere, and I'll have to copy it and let you read it, because the guy came up with the same idea I had. And I said, man, it turned out to be just heavy, though. But if you're sitting somewhere on a stand, and you got a rifle accurate enough to kill one at 70 yards or so, you don't have to move around a lot with it.
Yeah, Rocky, my friend, John Rocky, he's passed away now, but he was a nut, and he really loved shooting, and he was a gun nut. But he had one of the finest scopes for brilliance I ever seen, and it was a Leupold, and it was a 7.5 power, and it was a tapered crosshair. And I've never seen those since. It was thicker at the outside by a little bit, and then it tapered down to like a hair. That was one of the nice shots. I shot a 1/2-inch group with his 22-250 40 XB at 215 yards, Jerry, off the roof of an old 63 Chevrolet truck. Of course, we had sandbags.
That power was the best telescopes ever made, and I think it was at AU as well. They made a 6-power compact fixed with an AU, and that was, but that's 7.5. It was ideal for like a, you know, 200-250-yard rifle, a varmint rifle. And I remember one of the guys I shot with, I don't know whether he had it on a, he might have had it on a 222 Remington, but that was always a nice looking scope. It just had a good proportions to it, and it was about the same size as like a, I want to say it was about the same size as maybe a 3-9. It might have been a little smaller than that, actually, but it was a nice scope. Just enough power, you know, to not real long range stuff. I mean, if somebody's shooting crows, that's easy on crows. And you 222 Remington, I think, because he had a 700 BDL. He was mounted on a 700 BDL, I think. That was a nice scope. You don't see, they don't make that 7.5 anymore. They don't make the 6 compact with AO. That 6 compact with AO was ideal for a 22.
If someone needs to get in, use the repeater. It's in Gerald TR. Yeah, I'm looking at that Diamondback, Jerry. Oh, by the way, his was not an AO, but it was a wonderful piece of equipment, I'll tell you. I'm looking at, they got several of those Diamondbacks for 4 to 12, and it's $339, but it's not AO. And, I like them with an, I just got to have it, an adjustable objective. But this other one works fine. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just my old hand's got arthritis, and it's hard to turn that adjustable objective on it. But, yeah, John's didn't have that, but, boy, that was a great piece of glass, I'll tell you. It was brilliant and a lot brighter than my – I had a – 4 to 12 Redfield with a crosshair peep, and I thought that peep was nice on it, but I had mixed emotions about that. It was just something I wanted to try one time. It was a big scope, but I noticed that, I think I said Leopold had one, and it was 30 millimeter on the front. And I've been seriously looking at that one, but I got to go back. And I ain't going to spend that kind of money unless I just have to.
To find reasonably priced, all the stuff Weaver was making in Japan there for a while, some of the better scopes, too. Now you can't get them. They were pretty cheap. Nikon, too, for that matter, but they're made in the Philippines now, I think. But, the only scope I ever had an issue with is I had a 2-7 Weaver mounted on a 270 Ruger M77 bolt, and I took it out. I was here in Anderson then, too, back in the early 70s, and took it out and dug everything fogged up, and I came back and took that thing off and put a 2-7 loophole on it and never gave it another thought, and I had that rifle for a long time. Never gave me a bit of trouble out of it. I think it was just a regular duplex, so. I remember those tapered crosshairs on the loophole scopes. They haven't done that in years, Tom. I don't think.
Any more of them. I've dialed up Leopold here. Cabela's, I haven't clicked on it yet, but it says, people ask, is Leopold made in China? And it says, Leopold rifle scopes are all designed, machined, and assembled in our Beaverton, Oregon manufacturing facility. We do not have any other rifle scope manufacturing facilities or offices anywhere in the world. So he is right about that. But I did read something the other day about they were designing a few now, but they still did their own glass and assembled them right there. But I was thinking it was something that was made in Japan. Well, I had a question. Jerry, and this is a dumb one, but I never did even think about it when I was younger. How do you center the crosshairs on one, if you know what I'm talking about? In other words, if you get a scope and you got to turn the turrets a whole lot to get it zeroed up, well, your eyeball sees that in the center, but it really isn't there. Can you explain that?
They're basically in like a, it's basically in a tube, within a tube. And that's how the, you know, when you adjust it one way or the other, that's what does it, moves the whole tube a little bit. But there, I can't remember how to do it now, Tom, but I know I've had a guy tell me how to actually center them back up like they were from the factory. And, but it's like, you know, you can just, you get a range of clicks, how many clicks you're supposed to have. You run it over one way, then you run it back so many clicks that way and do the same thing with a, with elevation, and you can get the crosshair actually centered, the crosshair and the tube centered within the scope tube. And a lot of guys, yeah, they want it, the lower the bore, the lower the scope is, the lower, the better off you're going to be as far as getting it staying on center. But, you know, but it's basically got a tube with another tube. It's just moving that tube around inside the scope itself. The reticle itself, you know, is moving, but it's not. Years ago, you know, the reticle would actually move up and down. You could see it moving, and it'd be kind of off-center, but when these more modern scope manufacturers started, they changed the design of the scopes inside. It's basically just an internal deal, and it just moves the reticle around, you know, complete reticle, and the reticle basically mounted inside of a ring, and then it's got a tube on the inside, on the outside of that with a this house is all that, and it moves that whole deal around inside. The ones I think that's the way I remember it. Now, I've seen the guts of them before, but it's been so long, I may be wrong on that.
That's right, and it's kind of along the lines I was thinking, but thanks, Jerry, that cleared up a little bit to me. But there is a way they can bring it back originally if you go into the right gun store or gunsmith or something, they tell me, but I don't know how they do it. I was just wondering if they did it with a bore sizer or what. I just didn't know. Well, I brought up the Leopold site here at Cabela's, and they got a Leopold VX Freedom EFR rifle scope, 3-9 by 33mm, and it's got an AO on it, but that sucker's $399.
What they did, that took the place of the old compact 3-9 EFR on it, I think. It goes down, doesn't that parallax just down to 10 yards?
Let me scroll down here. You're right on. It says here, and it's, again, it says they're designed, machined, and assembled in Leopold's Oregon factory. The VX Freedom EFR extended focus range features a front parallax focus ring that adjusts from infinity all the way down to 10 meters, making it ideal for use with air rifles or rimfire rifles at close range or other specific applications. So you're exactly right, 10 meters, so that's pretty close. So you'd have clear down to 30 feet, I guess, or 40 long in that area.
3 feet. Yeah, I thought it was 10 meters. It used to make a 6.5 to 20 that did the same thing. But that one is, the thing about that one, I believe, if it's the same, if it's like the old one that I had on one of my rifles, had one on one of my cameras years ago, and it's a compact, so the eyepiece is not as big, and the field of view is not anywhere near as big, and you don't have much eye relief on it. It's only got, you don't have that wide range of eye relief like you. In other words, the eye box is what they call it. The eye box is smaller on that scope than a normal size scope, because that thing has got, it's probably 33. You know, the objective is probably 33, but that includes the AO on it. And the back end of it is probably closer to 28 or something like that, the eyepiece. Unless they've changed them, they may have changed the eyepiece. The eyepieces are small on them. It's real hard, though. You got a real short area where you can put eye relief on that scope versus a, you know, regular scope.
I'm glad you brought that back to my memory, because I read that the other day, and I just now scrolled down to the specs there, and it says 3 inches to 3.4 inches. I would not like that. And it says field of view is 13.6 to 33.1 at 100. But that eye relief, wow, that can make it practically unusable to certain people.
Poor DJC. One of the things that I recall, I put that scope on my ultralight arms, Kevlar stock, single shot, just a bolt, left-hand bolt action, but it just got the rings, just got regular mounts on it. But one thing about that 3-9, when that thing was designed, it was designed to fit, basically to fit those, the rifles that still had groove receivers. And those Kimbers, the 82s, when they first came out, they were grooved. They used loophole, vertically split rings on them, what they came with. So, that's the rings were actually designed, were designed by Jack Warren or Leonard Brownell, but they were, they were basically designed for the Kimber rifles. And that one, that Kimber was, it was just a full-size 22, but it had that groove and ran all the way to the back of the receiver, so you could move that scope around on that. In the newer rifles, you didn't have that flexibility. You could either flip the mounts or something else, but with the Kimber, again, was small enough where you could put a, you could actually put a four-power loophole compact on it and get it back far enough where you could do. Otherwise, you had to crane your neck too far forward because the eye relief was so daggum short on it.
That's interesting. Well, they say here store availability is out of stock, so that's good. shoot. Well, if you really want to get into some money now, buy one in the first focal plane.
I never bought one. Did a lot of my friends bought those, bought Schmidt Benders and Night Force and U.S. Optics stuff, $3,000 or $4,000. I wouldn't use one enough in my lifetime to warrant paying that kind of money for it. Loopholes always worked pretty well for me. They were always the standard. There's a lot of people that are better than them now, but for most of us, that's more than good enough. And plus, they stand behind the products too.
Yeah, I'm looking at a Leopold VX-6 high definition rifle scope. $1,499
to $2,099.
You might as well say
$2,100.
That's out of my pay grade.
For a rifle scope, long enough to warrant that kind of money. Although, like I said, there, if you're a competitive shooter or something like that, you do that all the time, and that's the only hobby. That's one thing. Most of us time have too many diggum hobbies to spend that kind of money. It's one thing to spend that much money on radio that you use all the time, but you can't carry that rifle around with you and use it all the time.
You can buy a new Model 77 for that much. Those are good rifles. He become our superintendent later on. Him and I used to coyote out some, and he had a Ruger, and it had a real skinny barrel, and it was a 244. And man, was that a coyote killing son of a gun. And he was a good shot, and he was fast. And but I remember that one. But those are really great rifles, that M77, Jerry. Well, anyways, I better get off on another subject here, but thanks for the info this morning, and I'm in no hurry. I'm still looking, and they put that property up for sale, which is many, many acres over behind us, and I think it's about $400,000, but it says up for development. God, I hope they don't. That would really suck.
But it's always creeping forward. It seems like those places you think nobody ever develop, you turn around one day, you're driving down the road, and you say, good grief, they cleared that place off. Next thing you know, they got 150 houses built on it. And I tell you what, these interest rates, as high as they are right now, I don't see how anybody can afford to buy some of these houses unless they're paying cash for them.
Well, there for a while, they were paying cash plus over the list. and ordered outbid people on the houses. It was crazy. But I see these huge, huge developments like down by the Greer High School going in. And, I mean, just far as your eyes can see out there. And just think of the utility cost and stuff. It's just amazing. It's right across from the golf course. So that'd bring a higher price, too. But, and real near the school. But they've done nothing to the road either, and it's really gone to heck. But you can't tell them. Well, just like out here, I went out to San Angelo, Texas one time, Jerry, and they sent me out there as a field service engineer. We had manufactured the dam gates for a dam, and I had set the limit switches on them, which were very complex limit switches, at the plant, and they worked. And I'd never seen limit switches that big. But anyways, they flew me out there, and then I'd drive out in the desert about 90 miles. And they stopped that whole project because of some salamander or something there was going to kill. Well, heck, I see stuff on the game cameras out here all the time. I don't use them to hunt with or anything. I just throw food out there now and then to feed the animals way, way, way out back. And I got fox, I got coyote, I got opossum, I had 7 raccoons in there one time, 5 coyotes in the picture one time, and deer are out the kazoo. They're not very big this year, but there's a lot of them. And they don't think anything at all about going in and building 400 houses there and running the animals out. There was even a mama bear and there were 3 cubs out there last year.
The TRM4DJC. Yeah, one of the guys I went to high school with lives up in Clarksville, Georgia, which is kind of up in the mountains. And he's got bears all over his place. He has to put fencing up, he's had to all over the place, and people, they got seasons, but nobody's hunting them anymore much, I don't guess. They have bear season up in Oconee County. It may be open now, as a matter of fact, but they run them with dogs up there, I think. But, I wouldn't be, there was one over, in Hartwell, near my mother's house, there was one up in a tree down there, right down below the house there, about a block away, and that one but 2 blocks from the city hall. And it was a pretty good size one. They see them, they have bear seasons over there, too, but they see them all the time going through there. And I said, man, I said, that'd be, I've been fishing a trout stream, had one cross in front of me before, but I don't want to be that close to one.
I know what you mean. They got them, within 10 miles of us here easily, and up towards Landrum. Always want to call it Inman, but about the same as far as distance goes. And they killed a record bear up there a couple years ago. I can't remember what it weighed, but way north of 600 pounds, I know. But we don't very often see them here, but I love seeing the animals and love feeding them out. I'll send you a little video. I went down on the riding lawnmower there yesterday, and I had put out, Bernice had a bunch of turkey stuff left over from Thanksgiving after she always gets the broth off of the rotisserie chickens or that, and then makes chicken and noodles or whatever. Well, this was a turkey, and she did the same, and there was some scraps of meat and stuff, and I put it down there. But at any rate, you look closely at it and you'll see. But as I went down there, there was a beautiful hawk with a red chest on him. So I assume red-tailed hawk. And I thought, well, if I get very close, he'll fly. Or he'll come after me. Kept idling right on forward and didn't change the idle of the lawnmower. and I got the little telephone out. I just got a Mini 12 and started videoing it. You wouldn't believe how close I got to that thing before he drug one of the items off. And he didn't seem to care if I was there or not. He was enjoying his meal. Well, I love to see that, but I was very amazed that a hawk would let you get that close to him.
We got a couple of them here. They were here when the trees were next door, and yeah, there's still plenty of trees. Less than 100 yards from the lake, there's still plenty of trees down there on the backside of the debris. There's one, I see one or two every year down here, and there was one, I guess it's a year or so ago. Well, it might have been earlier this year. I know a couple of years ago I was out there messing with a bait casting. I was casting a heavy worm. I didn't have the hook in. I just had to cast and try to straighten my line out. That dug them off, try to take them a little away from me. Red tail. And then we got some sharp shins out here that attack the bird feeders next door every once in a while. But there's one red tail. He just parked his carcass over there next to, on top of my mailbox out there, and just sat out there. And I drove by him. And I bet I went 10 feet from him. He didn't move. He didn't ruffle a feather. He wasn't any more scared of me than nothing.
Was, and it's a wild animal. You don't know what he might do. And I've been around hawks before, and I've handled owls, or an owl, one time with a big cuff on my arm, of course, but the grip they got is just totally amazing. But I think if anybody buys that property, they'll build a big house on it or use it for an investment property. I hope they don't use it for development, because it's got a creek runs through it and kind of a swampy area. And so I think it'd be really hard to develop it, but you never know nowadays. They got big bulldozers out there. Anyway, dear, we've enjoyed the conversation this morning, and I think I'll walk down and check on the birds, the girls, and see how they're doing out there. And we fed them real good and watered them, because they said there was going to be winds along with the rain, but the rain come first, dampened things down, and now it's blowing up to 16 miles an hour out of the southwest, so it should dry things out quickly. Take care, Jerry. The pleasure's all mine, sir. You have a good day, and I'll see if I can send that video down to you. In 4DJC, in 0OTR, we'll be clear with your final, Jerry.
You have a good afternoon, you and Bernice, and I hope Bernice is feeling better. Take it easy, and don't overdo yourself. You got out there and worked too much yesterday, but I'm like you. We plan, I guess, and start doing something, and wake up next morning, wonder why we're so sore and stoved up. I said, well, it wasn't like that 10 years ago. I said, well, that was 10 years ago. But anyway, time you have a good afternoon. Pleasure was all mine talking to you as usual. 73 and 4 DJC clear.